I asked author and wellness coach, Dr. Raquel Garcon, to define wellness.
So wellness is maximizing how good you feel and how able you are to do what you need to or want to in life to the maximum of your individual potential and capability, considering internal and external factors that impact you, and leveraging the resources you have available as you go through each stage of life. The focus is on what you can control, influence, or manage, and assumes individual determination, responsibility, and ownership.
We'll unpack that and take your calls on Be Well with Raquel, and we'll begin right after NPR News. 575-646-2212 to be a part of Voice of the Public with KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon. It's 106. Welcome to Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. It is Be Well with Raquel Day. Dr. Raquel Garcon joins us, and it is made possible by Mesilla Valley Hospice and Oregon Mountain Solar. Welcome back to KRWG Public Media, Dr. Garcon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, we have a lot to get to today, as always. We have an hour to do it. Well, actually now just 54 minutes. But 575-646-2212 is the number to call. If at any point you have a question for Raquel, we welcome your participation. We're Zooming today, so on our Facebook page, you can follow us there, and you can actually see Raquel and myself as we navigate this hour. And you can also go ahead and comment, ask your questions on Facebook if you're more comfortable doing it that way. We have many ways to listen and be a part of KRWG Public Media in 2021. How is the new year treating you so far, Raquel?
It's actually been really great. And sometimes I feel bad for saying that because I know that for everybody, 2021 has not started off to be a great year for them. And so I say that humbly and gratefully that so far so good. I have no complaints at all.
We did have a question off air before we began today from someone who wanted to know a little bit more about your background, specifically all those letters that come after your name. So maybe you can start there.
Sure, I'll try to keep that brief. So I have a bachelor's degree in nutrition and a master's degree in nutrition. And so I am a registered dietitian and nutritionist and also licensed here in the state of New Mexico. I went back to do my doctorate at the age of 40. I did my doctorate in global health sciences with a specific emphasis on behavior change and neuroscience and how that influences behavior change. I am a certified personal trainer as well. I recently got certified as a mental health integrative medicine provider because I do a lot in the area of mental health. So I wanted to do that. And then I also have a Six Sigma green belt, which is, most people don't know what that is. It applies really to like quality control and quality assurance within businesses. And I felt that there was a lot of application in terms of that type of certification and how you make things work better in businesses actually to personal lives. So I got certified in that as well. And I've worked in inpatient and outpatient and hospitals, community settings. I've worked for the government and academia, startups, nonprofits, for-profit organizations, large and small. So that's a little bit of my working background. And now I own my own company.
You've made me tired just listening to all that. Where did you do your schooling along the way?
My bachelor's I got at the University of Florida. I grew up in Florida, so I am a Gator, a Florida Gator at heart. I'm sorry if that offends anybody. I did my master's at Texas A&M University. I've never been to Texas in my life, and I got into school and went there, and it was really a great education. I'm super grateful for that. And then I did my internship at Scott and White Hospital, which I think now is Baylor in Temple, Texas. And then I did my doctorate at a school in Florida, Nova Southeastern University, that's known for its healthcare degrees. And so that was my schooling.
All right. Well, let's dig into the definition of wellness, which you provided for us just a few minutes ago. And, you know, for anyone who just joined us and maybe didn't get a chance to hear it, give us that definition, if you can, one more time. And tell us about the parts of it along the way.
It's very long, so I'll give it to you and then we'll break it down. So, and this is my definition, just to be clear, you're not going to find it anywhere else. So wellness is maximizing how good you feel and how able you are to do what you need to or want to in life to the maximum of your individual potential and capability, considering internal and external factors that impact you and leveraging the resources you have available as you go through each stage of life. The focus is on what you can control, influence, or manage, and assumes individual determination, responsibility, and ownership.
So wellness is really a very individual thing because we can't Correct. All expect to operate on the same level. What is maybe the starting point for someone who says, I want to get on that path? Which aspect do you look at first?
Well, really, I look at whatever aspect really matters to them. So one of the first things I ask is, you know, why is this important to you? How does this impact just your everyday life? You know, and most people, you know, they'll come to me and they'll say, well, I want to lose weight. And I'll say, okay, well, why? You're not going to really want to be remembered for being thinner. That's not really what it's for. Maybe losing weight for you means that you're able to have more energy. You're able to do more things that are fun in life. Maybe you associate it with living longer, being free of disease, or maybe managing a disease that you currently have so that you can live better. I think at the end of the day, most people just want to live better. And that's what this definition is all about, because we can't compare ourselves to others. We all don't have the same resources. We don't have the same genetics. We don't have, you know, the same families and work environments. And so we want to work within the realm of what is really practical for us.
575-646-2212 to ask a question of Dr. Raquel Garzón here on Voice of the Public and Be Well with Raquel. You talk about the four pillars of health. And if I remember our last conversation, we should probably start with sleep.
Yes, you remember that. That's fantastic. Yes, you know, sleep is really the foundation. And when you look at, you know, research studies, most people do not get adequate number of hours of sleep. So I'm going to repeat what that is. It is 7 to 9 hours, and it is every single night, meaning that you cannot average your hours of sleep. You can't get 6 one night and then 8 another and say, I averaged 7, so I'm good. Every time that you miss out on that minimum amount of sleep, it has a negative impact acutely, and it begins to accumulate for a long term. And the reason I start there, I think you might remember this, is that you can be doing really well on nutrition and exercise, but if you don't get enough sleep, you really don't reap all the benefits from doing all of those great things in nutrition and exercise. And that's really the problem.
Not too long ago on the TED Radio Hour, which airs on Saturdays here at KRWG, I was listening to the topic was things that take time. And sleep was one of those things, and, you know, exactly what you're saying. And one of the shocking things, though, that I hadn't necessarily heard before was along those lines, if you are, you know, getting 2 hours too little sleep, you know, you've lost 2 hours of sleep, but the percentage of like brain function and ability goes down by something like 60 to 80%. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty shocking even to me, even after all I've heard along the way about how important our sleep is, that important REM sleep that we hear so much yes. about. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, we have 5 stages of sleep. Stages 3 and 4 are deep sleep, and REM sleep is stage 5. And what happens is, as we go through our stages of sleep, what happens is that the system prioritizes deep sleep first, stages 3 and 4. That really works on a lot of the body processes that need to take place. But the other thing that it's doing is it's clearing our mind of information to make room for new information. In stage 5, that's when you more work on the brain in terms of, you know, preventing dementia and Alzheimer's by cleansing out some of those toxins. But that's also where you replace necessary information. And what happens is the first cycles, we spend much more time in deep sleep and less time in REM. And it's not until later cycles that we minimize that deep sleep to expand REM. So when people are cutting their sleep short or they're waking up often, which disrupts the cycles, stage stage five, REM sleep gets the short end of the stick. And then all of a sudden you're forgetting things and you've got all these memory issues and executive functioning issues. And you start to get paranoid that your mind is aging and there's something wrong with you. But really what it is that you're always shortchanging that part of sleep that is so critical.
I've always found it interesting, even before I heard any of this, I felt like I had a bouncer in my brain. And for whatever reason, things that I took in for entertainment purposes, like books and movies, I can't remember them. And all of my friends seem to be able to spit back out these lines from movies they saw years ago. And I think, what's wrong with me? It must be that bouncer in my brain, right? Or I'm not getting enough sleep.
It could be. There are a lot of factors, so I can't just point to sleep. But sleep is certainly one of them. So if you're deleting information and you're not going through the stage that replaces information, you might be in trouble.
All right. Well, listen, 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call. We've got Dr. Raquel Garzon and Be Well with Raquel today on Voice of the Public. Let's talk about you. Edmundo, good afternoon. Oh, I'm sorry. I picked up the wrong phone line. Edmundo, are you there?
I am. Sir.
That is
here.
The first time I have done that. Welcome to Voice of the Public. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing well, thanks to Raquel.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, Raquel and I started talking about wellness 3 years ago, and she really encouraged me to follow the four pillars of wellness. And, you know, I hate to say this, but it took me 2 years to finally get to the program, and within the last year, I started eating better, sleeping better, and I've managed to lose 15 pounds through all the steps and processes of following the four pillars of wellness. So thank you very much, Raquel, for encouraging me to do so.
Well,
thank you, Edmundo. That's so great to hear.
What did you find was the biggest one that you struggled with the most?
The biggest one I struggled with the most was eating, primarily because I'm used to a high carb diet, and I cut back on my carbs, and I stopped eating fast foods for sure, and I immediately saw an increase in energy and a loss of weight. But there's a big but.
Uh-oh.
When Christmas came around, the holidays, boy, did I lose track of certain things, and I found myself gaining back 5 pounds instantly in that 1 week.
You probably lost track of tamales.
Yes, tamales is my soft spot and my arch enemy, but yes. But no, overall, the key to my wellness was sleep. It was just not getting enough sleep, and I just make it a point to get enough hours of sleep.
Was there any special tricks you had to employ? And tell me if it's none of my business, but, you know, I'm so curious because to hear your experiences. But so many people struggle with sleep, and that's actually what I wanted to touch on next with Raquel. Were you having a hard time sleeping, and what did you do to fix it?
The key thing that I did was I started sleeping with a mouth guard.
Oh, yes, I'm supposed to get one of those.
Because I had trouble snoring, which gave me like a bit of sleep apnea, because I took a sleep test, and they said I had borderline sleep apnea because of my snoring. And so by simply using a mouth guard, I found myself sleeping through the night and getting my full 7 to 8 hours of sleep.
So you didn't have to go the route of the CPAP machine. That's good.
I did not want that. I just, you know, I just did not want that. And I avoided it, and I hope to continue to avoid it.
All right, Edmundo. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you. No problem.
Bye, Raquel.
Bye.
Let's talk about some of those other sleep issues that people are struggling with.
Yeah, sleep is just about as complex as nutrition. So it could be that people have a hard time falling asleep, and then others just have a hard time staying asleep, apart from the others who just are convinced they don't need that much sleep, so they don't even try to get enough sleep. And so I think you have to really start with, you know, where are you? I always talk about the sleep mindset. Do you even buy into the fact that you truly do need 7 to 9 hours of sleep? And if you do and you're struggling, then you want to problem solve it. And I can tell you that the number one one thing is to establish routine. So sleep hygiene, going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time, including on weekends, not sleeping in. So I have a wake up time of 6 a.m. plus or minus an hour. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is. It's between 5 and 7. So that's what sleep hygiene is. And the other thing is that I think I see a lot of in my clients is problems with electronics, because it's not just the blue light that is emitted from iPads or phones or televisions that tells your brain to stay awake, but it's also the content that you're viewing and reading about that can keep you awake. So people are watching violent shows, or, you know, things that just the news and things that keep them up. So I put my phone away by 9 p.m. and I put it across the house in another room, and I don't pick it up the next day until I've already gotten up, gotten dressed, you know, eaten breakfast, don't pick it up again. So I think establishing, you know, kind of like you would do for a child, you wouldn't have them watching TV until 11 o'clock at night, things along those lines. And there are a lot of other influencers, you know, it's light, it's what you hear. I have to wear earplugs. My husband snores, maybe he's listening, but I do. That's the only way I can block out those sounds. It might be things like having comfortable sheets and mattress and those sorts of things. But it can also be that your thoughts keep you awake at night. So this is some of the stuff that I work on. How do you, you know, stop your brain from continuing to ruminate, repeat thoughts over and over again, worry? And through the pandemic, there has been a lot of that. And people are losing sleep because their brains just don't shut off. And that's where, you know, doing meditation and mindfulness and using apps maybe that you can just listen to, doing gratitude exercises can really help disconnect that brain and relax you for sleep.
And in some cases, my mother, for example, has spent years now, you know, that began, I think, when she entered menopause, but she became an insomniac and cut out anything with sugar, anything with caffeine, anything, and just kept cutting, and still really struggles with sleep. And I was thinking about maybe buying her a weighted blanket. I've been hearing a lot about them lately. Do you have any thoughts on that to offer?
Well, my daughter uses one. So there are people who seem to really do well. My daughter's on the autism spectrum, and we know that people on the autism spectrum sometimes need to feel more pressure on their bodies to really feel relaxed. But it can work for other people who don't have autism, you know? So I think that's definitely, you know, tactile, what we're feeling on our skin sends messages to our brain. And that does give feedback that influences our sleep. So diet, like you mentioned, caffeine, alcohol is a huge sleep disruptor. It causes you to fall asleep, but you may not go through the stages of sleep, or you may awaken during the night. The other thing that happens, though, with aging is our natural production of melatonin goes down. And melatonin is really necessary as a signaling system for our brains to go to sleep. So there are some people that need to talk to their doctors about that as a possibility, you know, rebalancing your gut microbiome, because that has a huge influence as well. So probiotics, we've talked about that on other shows. But some people need to have sleep studies done to make sure that they don't have a sleep disorder. There are countless sleep disorders, and you can develop them at any point in your life.
I feel like I'm a really good sleeper, but I guess I kind of the genetic horizon is there, right? So
well, don't worry though, because that'll keep you up at night.
Not looking forward to that. 123, almost 124 here at KRWG Public Media, and it's Be Well with Raquel. Dr. Raquel Garzón here today to talk about the four pillars of wellness. Just a reminder, none of the content today should be construed as medical advice. Be sure to talk to your doctor before beginning a diet or exercise regimen, but feel free to call in and ask your questions at 575-646-2212. We'd love to hear from you today. And thank you to Maddie Chavez, who is following along on Facebook and said it's her favorite call-in show. So well done, Raquel. You know, because it's something that we all, I think, feel like we can do better at overall wellness? You know, there's probably not a person on the planet who would say they've achieved wellness to their desired extent. And so we started with one of those pillars, sleep. And if there's nothing more that you have to add on that subject, you kind of started to mention the gut microbiome, and I would like to go ahead and move on because, boy, time's just flying by. And so, like, we can move over to some diet issues now. And, you know, Edmundo talked about it. I mean, I don't want to move ever too far from this area because of the food. And of course, the food is tortillas and stuff inside tortillas, corn tortillas, flour tortillas, masa, all of the stuff. It's so, so good. But yeah, sometimes we have to really work on limiting that. So what advice do you have in terms of making those healthy diet changes? And is there a certain diet that you actually recommend for people?
Oh, we've opened a can of worms, Casey.
Oh,
here.
I don't. No, please don't add worms to the diet.
I eat worms. So that's a whole separate story. I ate them in Puebla, Mexico, but we'll talk about that another time. So yeah, I think, you know, nutrition is very individualized and it's really hard to make one overall recommendation. And so what I tell people first is, of course, I always start with why. Why is making a change in nutrition important to you? And what is important to you? Is it your health? Is it your performance? Is it, you know, reducing the speed of aging? Is it food intolerances? You know, what matters to you? Because that's a huge influencer over the types of things you're going to eat and how you're going to eat. Beyond that, I mean, there are some principles that really kind of apply across the board. So getting a variety of foods, using the concept of moderation, not overeating anything, no matter how healthy it may seem, I think is just a good rule of thumb, you know, getting lots of different colors in your diet. But I think that the mindset around food is really the underlying factor here. So one of the things, because Edmundo called in, I'm just going to call him out about this. But, you know, we talked for so many years about food and he knew what to do. But what happened was, is that he didn't have the mindset where it needed to be to actually follow through with those things. And somewhere along the way, something clicked and he made a mindset change. Now, he still needs to do that for holiday time, I think, because what I mean by mindset is what lets us get away with things, where we go, oh, well, I never get to come to this restaurant, so it doesn't count. And oh, it's the holidays, so I can do whatever I want. And oh, it's a birthday, it's an anniversary, I had a really bad day, I had a really good day. And so what ends up happening is our mindset pretty much lets us get away with anything that we want to. And most people know when they're putting food in their mouth, whether that's going to be a great thing for them or not. And what they do is that if you're doing it, you feel bad about it. That's called cognitive dissonance, where you know you're doing something that doesn't really align with your goals. And so as human beings, we try to justify it. So we come up with excuses and explanations and a whole story, and it's very elegant. And then that's what takes us off course. And so I don't necessarily recommend a specific diet. There are so many out there. I think some can work for some people. Some don't work for, you know, the other people. And what I say is you need to listen to your body. You need to notice what makes you feel good and eat more of that. You need to notice the kinds of things that make your brain sluggish and you feel tired and eat less of that. So that's, I really try to empower people to get to know themselves versus counting on me, a supposed expert in nutrition, to tell them what to do. That's just not my philosophy and how I do things.
Well, sugar, to tie in a little bit back to our last topic, sugar or carbohydrates are something, if I'm not mistaken, that can really, especially if we're eating them later on in the evening hours, can really impact our sleep.
Sure. And what I would say is that sugars more impact the gut microbiome. So if I can talk about that for a second. So these simple carbohydrates and sugars just happen to be the exact fuel that what we call bad bacteria. So these are strains of bacteria that produce byproducts that are damaging to the system, not just the intestines, but our brains. They can lead to depression, anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder, schizophrenia, diabetes, obesity, all kinds of things. And they thrive on sugar. So what happens is when you eat a certain type of diet, they call it SAD, cut with the standard American diet. It's a little offensive, but that's just what it's called in the industry. The SAD diet is high fat, high sugar, you know, highly processed, and bad bacteria just feed on those things. And when you do that, it starts to kill off good bacteria that produce byproducts that are actually anti-inflammatory, that help combat all of these sorts of things. And so I would say it's more that than directly the sugar disrupting our sleep. When we mess up our gut microbiome, it has impacts on our sleep because it impacts our neurotransmitters, which are the little chemicals in our brain that pretty much do everything. So that's sort of how I look at it.
I see. And I'm remembering one study that was based on people being intentionally deprived of sleep and how they later craved more sugar in the aftermath of that.
Yes. So when we lose sleep, I will tell you that you wake up kind of already in like a survival mode, and your behaviors and the way that you operate will be in that mode. So you eat extra food. So it's estimated to be an extra 500 calories on any night that you don't get enough sleep, but you don't notice you're overeating. The brain just tricks you into doing it. And then you store more of it, your metabolism slows down. So it affects thermoregulation. The chemicals in your brain that tell you to eat and stop eating are all messed up. So even if you try to do a good job and you think you're doing a good job, you're not, because the system is trying to protect you. It thinks that you lost sleep due to some kind of a danger going on in your environment. It doesn't know that you binge watched your favorite series on Netflix. It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Anna asks on Facebook, how much does caffeine and alcohol affect blood pressure?
Yeah. So, you know, caffeine is going to be more of the blood pressure impactor because it's a stimulant. What you'll see is basically a rise in blood pressure as the peak of caffeine gets into your blood. And then you'll see a decline as that gets cleared by your system. The problem is that caffeine can have a half-life of, it can stay in your system for 8 hours. So for some people, if they're already borderline high blood pressure or already have high blood pressure, for that many of hours to increase that blood pressure, even a couple of points could potentially make a difference. I wouldn't say that alcohol is necessarily a big influencer of blood pressure. There are certainly benefits of alcohol from a heart disease perspective, but it is one of the biggest disruptors to our sleep cycles. And the problem is that most people drink it in the evenings close to sleep. And then I can't go tell people to have it at breakfast, you know? And so you're sort of in this conundrum. I'm like, oh, I can't tell people to go drink during the day. But I tell people, if you're going to drink, you know, do it in moderation and do it as early in the evening as possible so that it doesn't disrupt the sleep as much.
Sunday brunch.
Yes, I can't, I'm not going to write a prescription for it or anything like that, but maybe that is a better time. Yes.
575-646-2212. The number to call to speak with Dr. Raquel Garcon on Be Well with Raquel. So pleased to have her back with us today and so happy to take your questions as well. We only have her until 2 o'clock. So if there's something on your mind, give us a call now. Or if you're following along on Facebook, feel free to chime in there, just like Maddie and Anna have already. And Be Well with Raquel is made possible by Mesilla Valley Hospice and Oregon Mountain Solar. Now, we were chatting about the gut microbiome, and I'm not sure, we certainly didn't finish that topic. We talked about sugar as food for the bad bacteria, but now let's talk about how to take care of our good bacteria.
Great. Well, the number one thing that you can take in to feed your good bacteria is fiber of all different sorts, insoluble and soluble fiber. So these are your fruits and vegetables, of course, whole grains, nuts and seeds. You can think of oatmeal and oat bran and things along those lines. So the more fiber that you consume, the more food that you have for these good strains of bacteria. And what they do is they basically ferment the fiber. The fibers are things that cannot be broken down by the system. We count on bacteria to actually do that, and it ferments health, and it actually produces byproducts that have a very positive influence on our health. And like I said, the gut is the second brain. It influences what goes on in our brain. So high fiber is certainly one of those things, but if I can even talk outside of the scope of food, exercise actually influences our gut microbiome and makes our gut microbiome healthier. Unfortunately, the use of antibacterials is not good for our gut microbiome. And in the pandemic, that has been an issue.
We've been doing a lot of that for a year, yes. Haven't we?
Yes. And inevitably, what the studies show is when we are using a lot of things like hand sanitizers and antibacterials, they inevitably end up on things that then transmit into our mouth, and it kills off bacteria, just like an antibiotic would. And that was something I warned about early on in the pandemic. I said, we're going to see perhaps more autoimmune disease diagnosis and things occurring because we're going to be killing off perhaps good bacteria, which then results in disease processes. So I'm not promoting that we don't take care of ourselves amidst a pandemic, but for example, hand washing with soap can reduce your risk of transmission, but it doesn't kill off bacteria. So that's just something to keep in mind. Stress. When you stress a lot, it increases cortisol, and that also has a negative impact on our gut microbiome. And then we haven't been maybe outdoors as much, and being outdoors and getting in the dirt and being exposed to our natural bacteria in our environment. So digging around in the dirt is actually good for your gut. Having pets is good for your gut for the same reason. So I think that there are a lot of things that can influence the gut microbiome. And I think, unfortunately, right now with the situation we're facing in the pandemic, I think it's even more challenging than ever.
Let's talk a little bit more about stress and cortisol. I don't know if we're ready to move away from that whole topic of diet, because there might be a lot of questions about that remaining. So please feel free to call with those questions at 575-646-2212. But cortisol, what is it? What is its purpose?
Well, I mean, cortisol is a stress hormone that rises anytime that we're under stress. And so when we have stress, I'll just call it fight or flight, although that's not the only thing that happens. So I can get back to that. Cortisol goes along with it. And these are all protective mechanisms or action-oriented mechanisms, right? It's to help us act in that situation to protect ourselves, to survive, to do whatever we need to. But what we know is that when we activate the stress response too often or for too long, it's supposed to be short-lived and then we're supposed to get back to our baseline. But that's not the world we live in. Those chemicals, cortisol, adrenaline, just all of those things that are released, even glucose, because we release a lot of glucose, can have a negative impact on our health over time. And so we know that with increased levels of cortisol, you store more fat. You specifically store more fat in the abdominal region, which is where we have our vital organs. The body is trying to protect those vital organs, store more fat, cushion them up. But we know that when you accumulate fat in the mid region, it also leads to disease. That, you know, fat in the thighs, although we don't like it, is not disease producing. It's fat in the mid region. And so what started off as protective then begins to work against us. It can cause inflammation and systemic inflammation as well. Inflammation of the brain. What's bad for the heart is bad for the brain. So that increases our risk of dementia, Alzheimer's disease, and early cognitive decline as well.
Mm. Ron asks on Facebook, how does stevia affect the gut in sleep?
Yeah, that is a great question. So the studies show that oftentimes sugar substitutes are negative for the gut microbiome. So the Sweet and Lows and the Equals and even the Splendas. The stevia, so far, according to the research, does not seem to have a negative impact on the gut microbiome, as well as monk fruit sweetener. So those are two of the sweeteners. Now, again, it could show up down the line. That's why I say everything in moderation. But if you're going to use a sugar substitute and you are concerned about your gut microbiome, I would say that stevia and monk fruit sweetener are probably the ways to go.
Do you know what it is about the stevia that does better for us?
We're not exactly sure. It's perhaps because it's more naturally derived than some of the other non-nutritive sweeteners, which are a little bit more chemical. That is the only thing that I know and have read. I personally use stevia myself. I have to be really careful with my gut microbiome. I suffer from lupus, which is an autoimmune disease. So for anyone with an autoimmune disease, the care of the gut microbiome is a top priority. So I really try to stick with the stevia as much as possible.
How much did that play a role in your journey as a wellness coach?
Well, believe it or not, I got diagnosed with lupus well after going into this field. And I actually feel very grateful that I have all of this knowledge, but it certainly helped me to deepen my knowledge around the gut microbiome specifically. When I went to school for nutrition, we didn't talk about the gut microbiome. I don't want to say what year I graduated, but that research didn't exist. And so I feel like I've gone more in depth in areas that I would not have gone into had it not been for my lupus and really struggling because I didn't want to go down the traditional path of treatment. I really wanted to approach my own management of lupus in a very holistic way. And so when you look at stress and you look at sleep and you look at all of these factors, Casey, they're all really important. And I have been able to manage my lupus without some of the medications that can really be destructive as side effects for myself, which was one of my goals. Of course, if you need to take them, I would not tell people not to take them, but I've been lucky enough to be able to implement some wellness strategies for myself that have really helped me along the way.
When it comes to managing stress, what are a few ways that people have found success?
I would say that the number one practice that you can engage in, so I'll start there, is mindfulness practices. So there's a lot of research on mindfulness, and we know that when you practice mindfulness, which by the way is just paying attention in the present moment without judgment, that's all it is. You don't have to be meditating to practice mindfulness. Practicing mindfulness for 10, 15 minutes a day and doing it consistently literally changes how your brain functions. It changes even structures within your brain. Mm. And when you practice mindfulness, it reduces that fight or flight fear response. It can reduce thought rumination and thought repetition. It can help you to be more in control and self-managing your emotions, your thoughts, your behavior. So self-regulation is what that would fall into. And then it helps things like executive function, focus, and memory, and those sorts of things that we talked about early on in the segment. So I just tell people to download some of the mindfulness apps to get you started so that you don't feel like this pressure of like, I don't know how to do mindfulness. Am I doing it right? Just download some apps, just put in mindfulness in the search button and try different exercises out and see how you like it.
Yeah, it sounded easy until the without judgment part.
that is. I always tell people, just imagine your thoughts or whatever you're noticing as cars that go by. You're not trying to stop the car. You're not trying to get in the car. You're not trying to manipulate the car in any way. You're just watching it go by and observing it. And being an observer of yourself and your environment, as silly as it sounds, is extremely powerful for the brain. It really makes your brain more integrated and efficient and helps you to be able to self-regulate, which is what stress management is. It's noticing that I've been triggered in some way. It might be fight or flight, but the part that nobody talks about is sort of this freeze and sort of give in state, which is another state of survival where you just stop caring and you just give in and you let everybody else sort of tell you what to do. And you sort of lose control of your own self and taking ownership. And so when you notice that this is happening, it creates an opportunity for you to do something about it, which is the management part. So you notice you're triggered and then you decide what you're going to do with it.
575-646-2212. And Becky has been holding for Dr. Raquel Garcon on Be Well with Raquel. Good afternoon, Becky.
Hi, I just have one question. What is your best piece of advice for somebody who has lost about 100 pounds and just wants to keep it off?
Well, first of all, for that person, congratulations.
Yes, I think that is phenomenal. So what I always tell people is that basically, whatever you do to lose weight, you have to keep doing to keep it off. So a lot of times people think, I'm going to do this until I reach this state, and then I can sort of let go. But you reach that state based on those behaviors. And so there's an equilibrium that's established between what I do and the weight that sort of corresponds to it. So I think it's really about staying motivated, I think, is the real dilemma here, because it's easy when you have a goal that you reach. But then when you reach that goal, if you don't have another goal, it is hard to stay motivated, that intrinsic motivation, which is so critical to the maintenance phase. So what I would say is really just focus on, you know, why, you know, maintaining that weight is important to you, what it allows you to do in life so much better than, you know, the 100 pounds ago. Focus on that so that you can create that purpose and that motivation to continue the behaviors that helped you to be successful. That is the best advice I can give. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Becky, for calling Voice of the Public, and Be Well with Raquel. We have 15 minutes left. I can't believe it. This hour has gone by so fast. And 575-646-2212 is the number you can call if you have a question you want to squeeze in before our time is up today. Thank you to everyone who's been following along on Facebook. We have lots of viewers on Facebook today, and several questions coming in that way. If you're more comfortable commenting or asking your question on Facebook, we invite you to do that as well. And to all listening from all over at krwg.org, we're always streaming 24/7. So thank you for joining us that way as well. Wellness expert Dr. Raquel Garzon today, our special guest. Gee, where did we leave off? We were talking a lot about mindfulness, and I wrote down a question, and I was wondering how effective breathing techniques are, do you think, in terms of stress management?
I love breathing techniques. I feel so giddy about it. So a lot of times when people practice mindfulness, they use breath as a way to sort of tune in and really get a sense of themselves. And I think that that's a really important piece of mindfulness. It's not just noticing what's going on around you, but the key part is noticing what's going on within you. And just starting with the breath is very grounding. What I love about the breath and some of the exercises that I do with my executive and corporate clients is specific deep breathing. I do a method called 4-7-8 that I like. And this is where you inhale, you know, you for 4 seconds, you hold your breath for 7 seconds, and then you exhale for 8 seconds. And what that specific type of breath does is it stimulates the vagus nerve. You've just opened a can of worms again, Casey. So it stimulates the vagus nerve, which is the longest nerve in the system. It runs from the brain to various organs. And what's important about the vagus nerve is that it receives a lot of information from the body to the brain. And it's in charge of the relaxation state of the system. So it's what helps to activate the parasympathetic nervous system, which combats the sympathetic nervous system, which is that fight or flight side. And when you do this deep breathing and this 4-7-8 breathing, it stimulates the vagus nerve, and you can create a parasympathetic response, a relaxation response immediately, which is really good. But you don't just get immediate effects. Like, there's like a residual effect. So if you're doing the deep breathing regularly, you actually increase what's called vagal tone. So it's almost like working a muscle, and you work on it, you know, consistently, that tone, that muscle has more tone to it. Well, the same thing happens with our vagus nerve. And people with an increased vagal tone are actually more resilient, and they can manage their stress more effectively. So there are long-term benefits about this breathing. So, and then I always summarize with 4 things that deep breathing can do for you apart from that. And that's to calm the system immediately. It can relax you. So if you need to fall asleep, it can actually help you to focus and be creative and innovate, because when you calm the system, you actually enhance signaling to the prefrontal cortex, the front part of our brain that does all of those wonderful things. And you can actually enhance self-regulation, which is talking yourself into doing something that's hard, but it's better for you. So exercising instead of watching Netflix, picking the healthier food over the less healthy food, deep breathing prior to making those decisions can actually help you to make better decisions. So you just opened a whole thing, Casey, on the breathing.
Well, good. I'm glad. And can you describe for me one more time the 4-7-8 method?
Yes. So you would inhale, counting to four. So you would extend your inhalation to 4 seconds. You would hold your breath for 7 seconds. And then you would extend the exhalation so that it would take 8 seconds to do.
Okay.
And then you repeat that 4 to 5 cycles. You can do more if you like, but at least 4 or 5 cycles to get the benefits. You can lower your heart rate, your blood pressure. You can use this even in hospitals when people's blood pressures are high and they need to reduce that right away. Mm. You can use vagal exercises to actually make that happen even clinically.
I'll be honest with you. I have tried that at the doctor because I'm always rushing. And so I'm really stressed out by the time I get to the doctor. And I know the first thing they're going to do is take my blood pressure.
Yes.
And so I sit there while I'm waiting and I just breathe deep as I can. And it really feels like by the time I get my blood pressure taken, my heart rate, because I could feel my heart beating out of my mm-hmm. chest, but it's normal. And I think it works.
That's good. Well, and I always tell people, like, you don't want to just lower your blood pressure when you go to the doctor with deep breathing. You want to actually try to do that throughout the day.
I just want to.
If not, you're only cheating on your blood pressure.
Yeah, I just want to impress the doctor, right? Okay.
Yes.
Well, just a few minutes left, so we need to probably move on to our final pillar, which is exercise. And 575-646-2212 is the telephone number. And I want to say thanks now, before I let myself run out of time, to our engineer, Jacob Lockwood, who says he watches Netflix while he's working out. I guess that's okay.
It's definitely better than watching Netflix, not working out and skipping it, right? So it's something. I mean, exercise, what I tell people is this, you know, exercise has this association with weight. It has this association with, you know, health from a body perspective. The biggest thing that you actually gain from exercise is benefits to your brain. So I always tell people, if you're not willing to do it for your body, if you like your brain, you like it to work well, you want to keep it working well for a while, you want to be doing exercise. It has huge, huge implications there. And also for stress and anxiety, depression, those sorts of things. So of course, I have to give the recommendations that are ideal, which is you want to do aerobic exercise, strength training to make your muscles and bones and all of those ligaments and everything stronger, and flexibility to maintain range of motion. But what I tell people is just do something, anything to get started. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many of us are not getting enough exercise that I really try to take out all of those barriers of saying, well, it has to be 3 times a week and then it has to be an hour, and just start somewhere and find something that motivates you, that you like. Even if you don't like it. So I don't love running, but I like what I think running is doing for me. So that's what I try to think about when I'm running. And it sucks as someone with lupus whose joints are affected. So it affects all of my joints, so every single one, including my jaw. And so it's not always fun to run, but I do sense and feel that it gives me other benefits. And so I have to look past the activity to some degree and think about, what else am I accomplishing? I also try to just think about how hard it is to do. And just the fact that I've chosen to do something hard says something about me. So I try to focus on those sorts of things versus that activity itself. And maybe, you know, Jake likes to kind of pretend he's not exercising by watching Netflix, or maybe it's his reward for exercising. It doesn't matter how you look at it, as long as you figure out a way to make it happen.
All right. We've got Tim holding on the line with a question for Dr. Raquel Garzon on Be Well with Raquel. Good afternoon, Tim.
Good morning, or good afternoon. How you call from La Luz, New Mexico? I don't know if people know that place, but
we do. We're glad to have you along.
Yes, I was curious. Oh, the doctor, I got with my doctor last January, not 2 months ago, but a year ago, and I had a blood test. And I've come to find out most Americans are low on vitamin D. So she had me take vitamin D, and then I'm walking every day. I cut my soda out completely, and I'm riding my bicycle. It's just, it changed my life. I can get to sleep in 5 minutes. Totally serious. Unfortunately, I'm not married anymore, which is, I guess, okay to help me sleep, but vitamin D changed my life. Is that unusual?
Thank you for your question and congratulations on all the changes you've made. It's not unusual. First of all, most people around the world are low in vitamin D. It's really hard to get. There are a lot of things that interfere. We can get it from our diet. It's limited what we get from the diet, and we can get it from the sun in terms of converting to the active form of vitamin D through the sun activating through our skin. However, when you have a lot of factors like pollution, dark colored skin, so the pigmentation of your skin blocks that conversion of that to the active vitamin D from the sunlight, wearing sunscreen, depending on where you are according to the equator. But even in a place like New Mexico with so much sun, you oftentimes see low levels of vitamin D and people have to take supplementation. And vitamin D is implicated in so many different diseases, but just the way people feel, sleep, feeling really tired and lacking energy, it really accounts for a lot. And before, we used to never test for it. Now doctors test for it practically for anything that you complain about. They're going to test vitamin D levels. And we know that if we can bring them up to higher levels, either through a very high dose, so you can do a 50,000 IU dose through your doctor, or just taking supplementation can really make a difference on how people feel. I worked with people, I have clients in Asia, and you see extremely low levels, even lower than here in a lot of those different populations over there as well. So it's a global problem.
Well, Tim, how do you get your vitamin D?
50,000 a day.
Which
sounds extreme, but it changed my life, and I sleep like a baby. I mean, just crazy.
Well, you sound pretty happy. We're glad you called today.
And I ride my
bike.
Thank
you, Tim.
Wear me out.
That's good.
All right. Be careful out there. Don't forget your helmet.
Thank you. Oh, no. Never.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. And while we're on the topic of vitamins, also one that hit me, I was borderline. You know, I was just barely on the line of having a normal amount of vitamin D, but also B12, I want to say.
That's another common one. Yeah. And, you know, It's interesting because most people who get a varied diet who aren't vegan or vegetarian should have enough vitamin B12. But there are some things, especially gut-related issues, that can interfere with B12. You'll see it a lot in people that have gastric bypass surgeries. They have to get external vitamin B12 injections because they just won't have enough vitamin B12. But there are other gut-related issues that can impact that. So again, I can't make, you know, flat-out recommendations for people, but there are people who will have to do vitamin B12 supplementation in order to get enough.
Let's talk about any other supplements that you think are important for people to look into or consider.
Yeah, again, like I have to be really careful giving recommendations because, you know, it's a very individualized process. But I think that some of the ones worthwhile looking into and talking to your doctor or provider about would be probiotics. So I think, again, because of the gut microbiome, you have probiotics and then you have prebiotics, and you can sometimes get those combined in one. So probiotic is a live bacteria. Those are the good guys. And then the prebiotic, it comes with food to feed that live bacteria. So that's definitely something I would consider. Another one might be omega-3 supplementation, either through fish oils or flaxseed. You can get it through the diet, and it's better to get it through the diet. But I know people who just do not get along with, you know, with fatty fish and salmon and tuna and some of those sorts of things, and walnuts.
Yum.
And things like that. And so if you're not best friends with some of the sources of omega-3s, that's just something else to consider. It has very anti-inflammatory effects. It has been shown to have benefits around, you know, preventing dementia, cognitive decline, potentially heart disease and things along those lines. And so that's another one. You know, I think multivitamin mineral supplementation could be beneficial for people who just don't get balanced diets. But again, it is better to get stuff from food. And so if you can get that varied diet that's full of colors and you don't have food allergies and food intolerances that restrict your diet, I think it is better to do that. And then vitamin D, which we talked about, just because most people will potentially need supplementation in order to have enough.
Are there other foods, like maybe, do you have a category of superfoods that you turn to and make sure that you're getting every day or at least a few times a week?
Yeah, I think the superfoods are the sources of omega-3s. You know, you have like your berries category, blueberries and raspberries and strawberries that have high ORAC, so the antioxidant capacities that they have. I think that your nuts and seeds definitely fall into another category where they have benefits to the brain, benefits to the gut microbiome. Of course, just a varied amount of fruits and vegetables, but dark leafy greens specifically play a significant role. I think those are some of those main things that we already know are healthy and we should be including. So there's usually nothing that's like surprising. You know, you're not going to hear French fries as being like a superfood or, you know, your favorite fast food or desserts or anything like that.
Oh, come on.
Pretty healthy foods that are out there.
All right. Well, my goodness, we only have a minute left. So that's just enough time for me to thank you, Dr. Raquel Garzón, for joining us for Be Well with Raquel. And thank you for your calls and questions today. Some final thoughts on wellness moving forward?
I think, again, I always go back to remember why it's important to you, how it, you know, why it really matters for you to be well and to keep that in your mind as you go through your day to make the best decisions for yourself, not comparing yourself to anyone, but you be the best you.
All right. Thank you so much, Raquel. Great to see you again. And thank you for joining us for Voice of the Public and Be Well with Raquel, made possible by Mesilla Valley Hospice and Oregon Mountain Solar. How do we find you online?
You can find me at www.revitalizeproject.com. And I am on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Raquel Garzón on LinkedIn if you want to make a professional connection.
And Leora Zeitlin is coming up next with Intermezzo by Request right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. Have a great day.